Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 240 for May 2nd, a $500 plan to turbocharge GM sales. Watch Auto Line After Hours live at Autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2200 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website. Gary Vasilash, we're back at it again.
John, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. Just want to make it clear to the audience that are watching this and see this on my nose, you and I did not get in
a fist fight. A little band-aid on your
we
nose.
We did not get in a fist fight back there about hybrids versus diesels. So I just want to make
I just want to make it
absolutely clear.
That's great. And we got to tell everybody we've got Drew Winter, the editor-in-chief of Ward's, with us tonight as well.
Ward's Auto World.
Ward's Auto World.
It's the world.
Yeah.
That's great. Good having you here.
Good to be here.
So big week.
Yeah.
News-wise.
Toyota dropped a bombshell on this industry, announcing it's pulling out of Southern... Well, I mean, I don't want to be too hyperbolic about it, but they're pulling out of Southern California, moving to Texas.
Right.
Yeah, that was a shocker.
I'll tell you why it's such a shock to me, because I've been to that campus. It's a big campus in Torrance, California.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, I mean, they put the arm on me to try to move the whole Autoline operation out to California. They are so proud of being in Southern California, bellwether for so many trends across not just this country but the world, such a diverse population. They felt that was part of what gave them an edge to grow in this country. So to see them pulling out of there, wow, I'm stunned.
Well, you know, I think that basically we're seeing this company go through tremendous changes. I mean, I was surprised in New York when they showed the Camry and explained how basically there are 2,000 new parts. So it's not a mid-cycle refresh. Now, historically, would Honda or Toyota do that?
Never,
right? So there's change number one. Then you have this change of saying, okay, we're going to leave the place that we've been for decades.
Half a century, plus.
And we're going to move to, you know, Texas. Now, initially people thought, well, you know, they're going to be close to their plant. Well, their plant's in San Antonio, which is 300 miles away from Plano. So, I mean, it's maybe in Texas terms.
That was so disappointing to hear him try to use that line. I mean, they've got other manufacturing in Georgetown,
right.
Kentucky, and San Antonio.
Yeah, I want to know, when was the last time Jim Lentz was in a plant, or any of the top management? They get there every now and then.
But see, my thing is that I think what they're trying to say is we need to change the culture of this place, and that we've been operating perhaps for too long on autopilot. Now, let's really shake this up. And the other thing is that when you get right down to it, if these guys are leaving California, Nissan has left California, Honda has ceded much of the responsibility to Ohio, don't we have to begin to think, well, is it really where you're located? Does that really matter a whole lot to get in touch with those trends that you're talking about? Apparently not.
No, I mean, the designers are going to stay out there.
Right.
And if Nissan hadn't done this, well, the thing with the designers is that's a good place to lure designers still. But they're a small part of the component of the whole thing. But Nissan did exactly the same thing, pretty much. They've got costs, and look at how much Toyota is doling out now, just in its legal fees and fines. You know, $1.2 billion to the
Justice Department.
The Justice Department. Or whatever, then another billion to the aggrieved owners who lost $500 in value of their car. They're staring at billions more, possibly, in payouts further down the line and various legal costs and personal injury lawsuits that they thought they were probably going to win, but maybe now they aren't. You know, it's they're facing a lot of costs. What's the benefit of staying in California now? I mean, it just looks expensive for them. And then they've got Governor Perry handing them $40 million to...
And they're trying to say, well, it wasn't Rick Perry that made the... I'm going, $40 million from Texas? You bet that was on the governor's desk. Who signs off on a $40 million deal?
Oh, I'm sure that he did that. But, you know, on your site today, I noticed that you had the net profits of corporations in this business, and Toyota, $19 billion. I mean, come on, $40 million. It's in the change that's fallen out of the pocket.
But
here,
you know,
right?
This is all goes back to local responsibility. Now, Lentz is responsible for the U.S. or whatever. I mean, I think they're looking at a smaller pie. They're looking at costs all over.
I think it's different than that. You know, Toyota grew up in this country as a subsidiary. Really, multiple subsidiaries.
Yeah, whole different companies.
Of Japan, and all the real decisions were made in Tokyo. And then they had the unintended acceleration thing, and the Justice Department got involved and said, look, Toyota, you got to change the way you're doing things. And they started changing. In fact, they even brought in Mark Hogan, ex-GM guy, who's a buddy with Akio. They both worked together at NUMMI. And so they're changing all these things. And I think they finally realized, oh, my God, we're a big corporation now. Look at us. Toyota brand could well outsell Chevrolet this year. Toyota Corp, including Lexus, is knocking on the door of Ford. It could go past Ford at some point unless Ford really lights a fire under itself. And I think they said, you know, just like Chrysler built the CTC building and put everything under one roof, we got to do the same thing. And as soon as they thought that, it was like, wow, we don't have got to stay in California. Or did Tokyo say, you know, you guys really should get out of California? I'm sure it was Jim Lentz's decision to start to put things under one roof, but I wonder if it was Tokyo that said, get out of California.
See, but then the question comes, okay, if we take the state funding out of this picture, does Texas make sense for an auto manufacturer to have a headquarters there?
I thought it was a little bit odd, even looking at Nissan successfully moved to, you know, a suburb of Nashville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny because our senior editor, Christy Schweinsberg, did a blog this week that got a lot of attention to where she basically said Toyota's being kind of hypocritical. They've been talking about being green and their whole strategy for lowering carbon emissions, and then they move to this state that has a terrible environmental reputation. And, oh, she got all kinds of blowback on that. But maybe they'll green it up. Yeah.
Well, you know, we were talking about Texas, but really when you think about it, Nissan in Tennessee, Honda in Ohio, it's more of a Midwest grouping.
Yes.
You know, you're central time zone, so you're not out on the far coast. You're, you know, more in line with, from a business standpoint, where everybody is. From Dallas, boy, you can jump anywhere you want to, flying-wise.
See, but I was thinking about that. I'm willing to bet, unless things are going to change, that you can't fly from Dallas to Tokyo nonstop. Now, you can fly from L.A. to Tokyo nonstop. You can fly from Detroit.
Ask the chat room to check that out. Can you make a direct flight to Tokyo from Dallas? I'd be surprised if you couldn't. And somebody, once Toyota's in there,
right? I mean, that's what you think. But.
And how many of those 3,000 employees or whatever that are going to be in Dallas or Plano, Texas, are going to be flying regularly back and forth to Toyota?
Executive time is Tokyo. Very valuable.
Yeah. But there's going to be a handful.
And that's the other thing. Somebody made the point to me. They said, oh, yeah, John, it's not 3,000 or 4,000. Talk more like 5,000 or 6,000. Because all the suppliers that have to deal directly. I mean, somebody told me there's no reason for Saatchi & Saatchi to stay in L.A. for its Toyota account. You bet they're going to have to move to Dallas. So the number's actually bigger.
Yeah, well.
But again, I mean, I think it really comes down to that Toyota's looking to the future. They're looking at the demographics of the country. The country is moving south and west-ish. Perhaps the business climate in California with regulations and taxation is getting so onerous that you can't do it anymore. They probably looked at saying, well, maybe we ought to be somewhere around Georgetown. Maybe we do Lexington or maybe we do Louisville, someplace like that. But then it's just like, well, you know, it gets cold there. I mean, it doesn't get cold in Torrance. It gets cold in that part of the world. And so maybe they thought, well, where do you go? Do you go to Phoenix? Ah, it gets too hot there. So,
well, what were some of the, they were talking about Denver, Colorado as being one of the places. I thought they said Georgia, too, was another spot that, Lentz, I think, talked about three different areas that they had looked at. but ended up in Texas. And, you know, to your point, with $19 billion in profits that they're going to announce any day now for their last fiscal year, yeah, $40 million in moving, it helps, but I don't think that was the deciding factor.
No, I think it's long-term. Long-term, they were looking at the long-term costs, I think, of doing business in California. They were looking at the demographics and everything else, the fact that, maybe moving more towards the Midwest would make sense overall.
All right, so the answer to your question...
the chat room has answered.
I'm going to say this wrong. Texyoda said airline routes, American Airlines from DFW to Narita, Japan Airlines.
Okay, so there's plenty of flights.
Malaysia Airlines.
Right. Yeah.
So, and as someone pointed out, JJ pointed out, you better love American Airlines. They're 139 of 175 gates at DFW. So, we'll be spending a lot of time on American.
That's right. But, you know, you made a great point, too, culture change, because when Nissan left California, they lost 62% of their employees. That's a huge change.
Right.
Huge change. So, I think Toyota is, even though they're saying we want everybody to move,
sure,
they know full well most of them are not going to move. You know, we live in an era of dual-income families, so many of those people who work at Toyota have a significant other who have got a job in Southern California. And in some cases, the Nissan people said it was the significant other who made more money, not the one
right.
who worked at the
yeah.
car company. So, there's going to be a lot of people left behind.
I think they've looked at that really carefully, and they understand it. And I think it is. It's just a business decision, and they're going to lower their costs. They're going to get in some new people and change the way they do business a little bit. Just Plano, Texas, there's a lot of what? EDS was headquartered
right.
there, right?
It's a wealthy suburb.
Was OnStar there as well? Or?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. They might have had operations there, but...
But, yeah, it's not like they're going to be a bunch of tumbleweeds there or anything. And my son moved to Houston, and I can't believe Houston is the fourth largest city in the U.S.
Yeah.
It's very cosmopolitan. And I was a little surprised. It's a big move culturally.
Right. Now, if they had said Austin, I would have
yes.
completely
yes.
understood it. There would be no question. It'd be like, sure, you know, why not? I'll go work there.
That would be, yeah. I mean, I guess that'd be the question is if they ever considered that, but I'm guessing probably no.
I think maybe the costs have gotten a little higher in Austin, and, you know, Dell's still there, and although Dell's not doing all that well, but. I think they sufficiently raised up costs in that area. And
Okay, enough of Toyota. We could talk this to death and probably will on other shows. But we've got April sales today, too. And was wondering if you guys had a chance to look at the numbers. Any initial reactions to what you've seen?
I think things are getting better. Now, I thought we were going to have this real... front coming through with the spring here and nice weather and all that pent up demand
it's good, but it's not that strong.
It wasn't all that robust.
I was kind of disappointed because I thought that was kind of what we were thinking, and I haven't looked what the Ward's Auto official forecast were, but I thought that the industry in general was expecting April to be a pretty big month, you know.
And it's a good month. It's a solid month. There was almost 1.4 million vehicles sold. But the SAAR was just below 16, at least as you guys report.
Yeah, right. And
everybody else was predicting the SAAR to be, I don't know, 16.1 to 16.3.
Well, but AutoData says it's 16.4.
But they're not adjusting for the extra sales day last year. So, or this year. Yeah, there was an extra day this year, I think. So if you don't adjust for the selling days, the numbers look better.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why I go by the Ward's numbers. Look at me suck up to Drew here. But it's true. I mean, that gives you more of an apples comparison as to what's happening in the market
right
now. But, the other thing that I found interesting, the car company that saw the biggest drop in sales, Tesla. Tesla sales down 7%. Now, as we've talked about here before, I don't know what's really going on in Tesla because, You know, you guys are about the only ones, Drew, who report what their sales are. And that's just U.S. sales. Right. We don't know what their global sales are. So are they diverting, you know, product from the American market to other places where they're trying to grow? I mean, you know, they're talking about ramping up production.
The number one car in Norway or something. And,
right, which has, of course, huge, gigantic incentives
for... You don't have to sell three to be the best-selling there.
And they also have gigantic incentives for electric cars and huge disincentives for gasoline cars. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it would make sense. But yeah, the one thing we can be sure of is we're not going to get a straight answer out of Tesla about this whole thing. But, I think we've talked about it. Great cars. But their business model, I don't know how sustainable it's going to be. I mean, they're going to run out, even globally, they're going to run out of folks that want to buy a Model S, I think, in about 18 months. And everyone, they better have some new product in the pipeline.
Or maybe it's already happening.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, this is, I think, the second month in a row their sales have been down in the U.S. And like I said, I don't know, maybe they're just diverting product to Europe and China and other places. But but their sales are down.
So there were some cars that surprised me that had drop-offs. I mean, I'm surprised that the Accord is not doing at all well this year, and I don't understand why that is.
Honda will tell you all otherwise, you know. That
it's not doing well?
Well, they just focus on retail, and they're not discounting, and yada-da-da-da.
Well, that's fine. And MKZ for March, it was down compared to last year's March. Down 23.9%, but that said, it's up 57.9% for the year.
For the year,
but it's
that's a danger sign.
It's like what a surprise that is for that car. I mean, mm-hmm. because it was doing so well, and I know you're a big fan of Mini, Drew.
Yeah.
Every single one of their models has a negative sign in front of it.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah.
I mean.
Could the 500L actually be hurting Mini? Because Fiat sales were up.
Let's see. Well, 500L, so there's no comparison because it was new. So they sold 1,257 Ls last.
But total Fiat sales were up like 10%, although you're looking at auto data numbers. It should be even better.
I'm looking at Chrysler numbers now.
Okay.
So for the year, they're up 16%. For the month, they were up 10%. But let's just see what that 12 number looks like in the context.
Well, you're looking. I've been amazed, actually, that Mini sales have been gone where they've gone. I mean, I never would have predicted they would have gotten to their 60,000 units or whatever they're selling now. And
neither.
They keep on slicing the bologna thinner and thinner. You know, great cars, but I'm just amazed that they are even getting the appeal that they're getting.
Wow, this is you're right, John. So year to date, they've sold 13,047 Minis of all types, and they've sold 15,723 Fiats.
Wow. So I mean, to me, the Fiats, even though they're not the same car as the Mini, are probably the most likely to attract a Mini kind of buyer.
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, in terms of driving dynamics and things like that, they have no. The Fiats are no
match.
No match at all for the Minis. But I think if you have a lot of buyers that are just sort of looking for something, this sort of quirky European vibe, suddenly the Fiats can make sense. And
their advertising's been brilliant, I think. I think they're very effective.
And I don't know what the mix is in terms of gender of their buyers or whatnot, but I would think they'd probably be pretty successful with female buyers, mm-hmm. more so than with Mini.
The Fiat?
And with Fiat, I think that they've got the 500L, although I don't even want to be seen driving that. It's got a nice interior, and I think for the right person, it's practical. The interior is great, and it's something to show up in that's different from everybody else. So,
it is.
But I think we talked earlier that I'm continually perplexed about the slow sales of the new Chevy.
Silverado,
because I think that is that's the best truck I've ever driven. I think in driving dynamics, the quietness of the cab, powertrain, everything. It's just I think, a terrific truck. You think it's because it doesn't look different enough. I think it's just because the new, they came out with, at a very high price point with them, particularly the new models were optioned up very highly. You were looking at 45, 50 grand. And I think a lot of the speculation there is that Ford has a higher, has a more affluent buyer. They can afford to move up, or they generally spend more on trucks. And that I think they're just having trouble offering or moving the typical Chevy Silverado buyer up, you know, when they come in and they paid 25, 30 for their last truck, and now they're looking at 40, 45.
I'm going to have to dig up the picture, though, because at the media launch of the Silverado, they had the old truck there. And there's different grills on different trim levels. But I got two with the same trim level, and I parked them nose to nose, three-quarter to three-quarter view. And it was like, wow, which is the new one? And I think when people buy something new, it doesn't have to be super flashy.
Right. Yeah.
They don't have to brag to the world, but they do want the world to know they're driving the new one. I think that's still a problem for the truck.
And to the point of price sensitivity, if you look at the GMC Sierra, which is essentially the same truck, but at a higher transaction cost than the Silverado, they're doing fine, comparatively speaking. I mean, this
and the styling on that truck
that is
noticeable,
right?
And it looks good.
So
yeah.
So for April over April, it's 21.4% up
for the GMC.
For the GMC, the Silverado is up 8.5% for the year. The Sierra is up 8.1%, and Silverado is down 3.5%.
Yeah.
So it seems like people are willing to pay money to get something. I thought I like the Sierra much better than I like the Silverado.
Yeah.
It's a little bit. It's only going to get tougher in that market. I mean, especially as we get closer to the 2015 F-150, and we should probably mention Mark Fields officially being named the CEO. I mean, we speculated about that last week when we're saying, that's going to happen.
Well, the surprise is Alan Mulally stepping down July 1st. After he said, and Ford's whole line has been, he's going to work through to the end of the year. That tells me something's changed.
Yeah.
What changed? Is it Ford saying, go ahead, Alan, you can leave now? Or is it Alan saying, hey, Boeing wants to make me chairman? Or what? I mean, what changed?
Mm-hmm.
Something did, and it happened fairly recently.
Yeah. I'm guessing that they maybe, Ford may have asked him that he had to do something now because it's kind of leaving Mark Fields twisting in the wind even longer. And they probably, I don't know, there could be something going on behind the scenes. But I'm thinking you don't want to wait that long for a changing of the guard when everybody knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Mulally then being kind of like a lame duck for a long time. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that might have been, or maybe he decided that that's too long.
Could be. I don't know. But something changed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they were adamant. Oh, yeah, Alan's going to be through to the end of 2014. And now it's, only halfway through.
Well, maybe they're just looking at the stock price and see that nobody freaked out about Mark Fields coming in. And
I don't know. Right after the announcement, the stock went down 9 cents a share. So I don't know where it ended up today, though.
Well, it was going to be interesting to see whether there are other changes in other chairs if the chairs get moved around there and how that's all going to work out. I mean, you know, speculation of Joe Heinrichs is still a young man, more or less, and is he going to wait around to take?
Why not? I think he's about 10 years younger than Fields.
Right.
So Fields will be until he's 65. I think he's 53 right now. So Joe waits a decade, and then he gets the company for a decade. I'd wait. Why not?
but to fast track, people think that way. So I mean, you've got the possibility of something changing there. You know,
I were Joe Heinrichs, I would go to HR and go, Joe, I don't know if I can wait a decade. Whoa, that sets off the fire alarms. Here's all these bonuses. Here's all the extra. But please stay, Joe. Please.
So yeah, there could be that, and then the other The man who was on Autoline from New York 2 weeks ago, John Krafcek, was named president of TrueCar today, which is a real shocker. Former Ford engineer, former head of product planning for Hyundai in America, and then president and CEO of Hyundai until the end of last year, and now he's going to, I mean, what can you describe it as, a data aggregator that helps people buy cars? I don't know.
Yeah. I think he's going for the money would be the...
Well, yeah, because sure. We know that TrueCar is going to do an IPO. Scott Painter, yeah. The guy who started it, yeah. You know, to use a term that everybody else does, he's a serial entrepreneur. I mean, that's what Scott does. And now he got off to a bad stumble there when he yeah. launched TrueCar and pissed off a lot of dealers. But he got religion. He became contrite. He really listened to him. TrueCar's on the bound. They just got John Krafcek. My prediction is they do the IPO. Scott Painter takes his big chunk of money and turns the whole thing over to Krafcek.
So here's the question. So if we recall that Larry Dominique, who had been in charge of product planning for Nissan for many years, he ended up going to TrueCar. And now we have another guy who had been in charge of product planning as well as being the CEO going over to TrueCar. Does this mean that everyone ends up at some point going to TrueCar? Are you going next week?
No, well, I don't know. It depends on what they were offering me. I assume it wouldn't be hard for them to... yeah, I mean, I think those kind of deals, when you're talking about IPOs, I mean, they can offer so much more money.
Right. But wouldn't you guys rather see people like Larry Dominique and John Krafcek at a car company?
Absolutely.
Sure. But you know, if I'm running a car company or whatever, who wants to, you know, unless you're planning on retiring soon or whatever, who wants to hire John Krafcek? Because, you know, everybody them instantly is going to, oh, when's John Krafcek going to take over? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think he's a hot commodity. You know, the media
loves prediction him. Is he's not going to retire at TrueCar.
No.
He'll be back.
Will he end up in a car company, do you think?
Yeah, or maybe he'll start his own car company after he gets through with his IPO. You know, I mean.
there's several car companies out there that I think could use a Krafcek.
Well, there are rumors about Tesla.
Oh, there's an interesting one.
Yeah.
See, I was thinking, you know, I'm looking at who's going to retire in a few years' time. So Sergio Marchionne is not going to be here, you know, 5 years hence. Maybe Fiat Chrysler would need somebody like a John Krafcek. Jim O'Connor at Mazda, North America, is probably going to be retiring within the next 5 years. Maybe Mazda would like somebody like a John Krafcek. I think there will be openings in the future.
Yeah.
Okay, let's jump topics again, because, Gary, you brought this up, and Formula One. Boy, there's some interesting changes that have happened in the Formula One field.
You know, and so the question I think about is, you know, they had that engine change to go to the 2.4 liter normally aspirated, from the 2.4 liter normally aspirated to the 1.6 liter turbo. And if we go back to last year, Renault with a Red Bull team, those guys.
The last 3 years. Red Bull just cleaned up.
Bulletproof. And then you look at, so through the first four races of this year, Mercedes has won all of them. And Nico Rosberg won one, and Lewis Hamilton won the other three. And so when you look at the team points, Mercedes is at 154. Red Bull Renault is at 57.
And they're in second place.
And they are tied with Force India Mercedes, which is also at 57. So you look at the top five. So you have, after Force India Mercedes and Red Bull tied for second, then you have Ferrari, they're in there. Then McLaren Mercedes and Williams Mercedes.
Well, isn't Force India Mercedes too?
Yeah.
But is this a technology issue?
I think it is.
I think it's got to be.
Yeah, I think it is. And here's what I see going on is Red Bull has been in the fight. You know, they won the last three championships. Mercedes made a very interesting statement saying they have been working on this new powertrain package. Like you said, they went from naturally aspirated to
turbo.
And the KERS system, you know, the electric enhancement, is much more power, bigger mm-hmm. battery pack, bigger motors and everything. So Mercedes said they have been working to this season and have sacrificed the prior seasons because this is the formula, right, going forward. This is going to be in place for some time. They wanted to be ready for this one. And I think Red Bull, knowing that they had a chance to win the championship, may have delayed some development work to ensure that they got the championship. And Mercedes just said, go ahead, guys, we'll cede that to you, because now we're going to be the ones who dominate.
Wholly dominating. And,
and as you pointed out, you know, Force India tied with Red Bull? That's an engine package, man. That's how that's happening.
Well, and then it's so Nico Rosberg, who's in first place in terms of driver standings, he's at 79 points. Sebastian Vettel, who, you know, was dominating.
The whiz kid.
33.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in fifth place behind Nico Hülkenberg of Force India Mercedes.
Yeah, and what a crybaby Vettel has turned out to be. Mm-hmm. Things are not going his way.
He's not happy with it.
He sounds like a petulant crybaby. Mm-hmm. So it's
What about this whole engine sound business?
Well, that's a good question, because, you know, Formula One has always been about this super high-pitched, yeah, 18,000 RPM, you know, shriek as they go by. I mean, it'll damage your ears. To now, you know, turbo and the sound is very different. But I got to say one thing. You don't really notice it much on television. And the vast majority of F1 fans, like myself, watch all the races on television.
Sure.
It's way better than going to see the race live, because you can track what's going on in the race, whereas when you're at the racetrack itself, man, you know what happens at the racetrack? You know what the teams do? They watch television to know what's going on. So it's been very controversial, and Ferrari is really upset about it. But I think part of the reason, too, is Ferrari is getting its ass kicked, and Mercedes is dominating. I'd be screaming for a rules change, too. Mm-hmm. Anything. Hopefully to, you know,
right,
jam a stick in the spokes of Mercedes, anything to, mm-hmm, slow them down. But my guess is this is the formula. Honda's coming in. You know, that could shake things up a lot,
sure,
too, though it might take them a year or two to get going. But I don't think the noise thing is going to affect the series. And besides the racing this year, some of the races have been just fabulous, mm-hmm, really good,
yeah,
real good wheel-to-wheel racing.
And so, speaking of technology changes, Drew, it's sort of interesting when you think about it that April 30th was the 20th anniversary of the death of Senna. And, you know, you look at his last season and when he went over to Williams, and Williams had been dominating using technology, and then they had a rules change. And so Senna gets in this car that is built to have all this technology, and they had to take it out. And so then the poor guy if he wasn't such a brilliant driver, he would have, you know, never got off the grid. I mean, it was just like that bad. And so you just have these radical shifts that car companies or teams that had been so dominant just suddenly find themselves like, what the hell? You know, where did that come from? And as you're saying, you know, that you have Mercedes saying, we'll just wait. We'll just bide our time. We'll just develop this thing. And Renault is busy, you know, just winning races. Then the change comes, and then you're out of it. It's just like that. It's amazing.
And the irony, too, is it was Carlos Ghosn who told Formula One, you guys better do something about this, because, you know, we're not in the business of building 18,000 RPM V8 engines for the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about turbocharging, yeah, electric assist. You better do this thing. And now that they've done it, the Renault it's just not competitive.
They've got all those Zoe cars. You'd imagine they'd have all this knowledge that they could apply to KERS. I mean, it's just all those electric cars. It's just...
Well, I saw Mercedes talking briefly about the technology, and I was just kind of wondering if this was going to be, you know, really a new era, or if it was going to be like the Andy Granatelli turbine cars back in way back when the 60s, the 70s.
Mm.
Where the car was so good that they just told them they couldn't race anymore, right?
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, everyone has made the investment. Honda's going to jump into the game. I got my fingers crossed. I'm hoping GM and Ford jump in there at some point, too. I'm sure we're going to see others. But the point is everyone who's in there now has made this massive investment in the new rules change. And now to try and backtrack from that,
whew,
yeah. I don't think they could afford to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know how expensive F1 is. Once you made that investment, you got to let that pay off.
Right. Of course, let's not forget in NASCAR that we thought the car of tomorrow would be indeed the car of tomorrow, and it very quickly became the car of yesterday.
That's right. Hey, look, this is all good, but we got to get our guest Jim Dolliger in here right now. So let's take a quick break, and Ben, let's give a shout-out to our good friends at Firestone.
choosing a car company that's never made a single car. Legendary durability. Impressive mileage. Firestone tires. So unstrap the saddle. These old stallions are ready to run. Again. Whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
From Shanghai to the Silicon Valley, the auto industry may make news around the globe, but there's only one spot to get your daily dose. Check out AutoLine Daily at AutoLine.tv, Monday through Friday at noon Eastern. AutoLine Daily, for the concise word on everything cars.
Jim Dollinger, welcome to AutoLine After Hours. Great to have you here.
John, it's always a pleasure.
So we should explain to the audience, for those who don't know who Jim Dollinger is. He has sold more Buicks than anybody in the history of the auto industry. Do I have that right?
Well, unless there's some young buck in China I'm not aware of, probably true.
And there probably is a young buck in China who's going to sell more.
There's always somebody coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you also put together a plan that you believe could really turbocharge GM sales and market share. And this is not a new plan. You've been working on this for a long time.
Yes, sir.
So walk us through a little bit. What's your vision here of what could be done?
Well, first, I'd like to just say it's a real honor to be on your show with you gentlemen. I watch you regularly, and to be a guest here tonight, it's a real honor, and I appreciate you giving me a few minutes of your time and the invitation to come down and speak with you. And I looked it up, and it was about 10 years ago that I was on your show the first time. This is my third trip down here. I think you owe me some gas money.
Dream on, Jim.
This does not pay for performance. But Drew was on the first show.
Wow. And, wow. Now you're going to make me feel
yeah.
old.
He reminded me of Richard Dreyfuss. Remember that movie Jaws? The guy, the actor?
Yeah.
And the Goodbye Girl, maybe?
Yeah.
I know, you could almost be a double take for the guy.
Well, thanks, I think.
Yeah.
But his questions, and I liked your format. When you invited me down here, we don't know what we're even going to talk about.
Yeah.
And you guys are the intelligentsia of the auto industry.
So, but I'm curious in where you think GM is right now. I mean, well, in the media, they're getting clobbered for this ignition switch recall. But as you heard us talking about earlier, it has not affected their sales. And yet, their sales are not where they should be.
Well, if you get new people, okay, that helps you. And if you lose some people because of the negativity, it's a wash. We don't really know exactly how to measure the impact. But certainly bad news is not good. It's not good. But where General Motors is today, you don't really need me to come down here to talk about that because we're all aware of it. We see the statistics that you got there, Gary. And the question is where we're going in the future. And how do we get over the perception of government motors or the fact that people say, I don't want to buy a General Motors car? Then I talk about the brand. So how do we increase market share? Now, you can talk about where we're at today. And you got Ms. Barra, our new CEO. And I think she's doing a very good job. I wouldn't want to be in her shoes.
Yeah.
Nobody would.
I don't look good in heels. But she's doing a fine job, I believe. And the people I know at General Motors are wonderful people. And nobody would ever sign off on something or do something that somebody could jeopardize their life. We'll get through this. But, you know, I remember, and we're all old enough, that the imports got better gas mileage than we did. Now we're as good or better. And you look at our assembly plants. They produce less pollution. We recycle. We're using less energy. We're winning awards. The Buick dealers are the number one in the industry for dealer service. We got new engines coming out. We got great SUVs. We've got the Corvette. There's a lot of good stuff going on about General Motors. But as we've talked before, John, we don't have a product problem. We have a sales and marketing problem. So how are we going to sell more cars? I'm here today to talk to you about market share. This is what's important. If you have a rising tide, all boats rise. But if we go up 3% where everybody else is going up 30%, we're not getting our share of the market. This is worth hundreds of billions of dollars. This is huge. How are we going to do it?
Well, how? Give us some of your prescription.
I'm going to tell you. Now, Return to Greatness is my plan from 10 years ago. We talked about it, and I introduced the first 20 steps. And I put it on my website, generalwatch.com. I just lit it up tonight. Anybody who wants to go to generalwatch.com can see the first 20 steps of return to greatness. That was 10 years ago. I'm here to talk to you about today. Here's how we're going to do it. 5 points of market share, guaranteed. Cost General Motors nothing. 5 points of market share.
That's huge, man, because this is an industry, as you well know, that fights over a tenth of a point of share.
This is over $10 billion worth of profit to the corporation, to the stockholders.
Okay, you got my attention.
You're killing me. What are you going to do? Yeah.
Here's how we're going to do it. I'm going to tell you. I'm just going to flat come out and tell you how we do it, straight up. I call it extra mile. America went the extra mile for General Motors. Now General Motors goes the extra mile for America. We're going to give every licensed driver in the United States of America $500 free service at their local General Motors dealership. $500. Got a license? You got $500 free service at your local dealer. We're going the extra mile for America.
But this is if you own a General Motors car. So if I have a Ford, no. I'm getting $500 for
every licensed driver in the United States of America. If you have a Toyota, a Volkswagen, Hyundai, doesn't matter.
Okay, so you're getting the new buyers into people who would never consider going to a GM dealership before.
It's called extra mile. Now, we're going to give you $500 free service at your local dealer. Would you do that? Would you go to get 500? Would you go get 500 free service?
So for my non-General Motors car, I can take it to the service department of a General Motors.
Your local GM dealer.
And it doesn't matter.
$500 free service.
Get a brake job or whatever. Yeah,
and it costs General Motors nothing.
How do you figure?
A corporation. See, we're wasting billions on these goofy rebates. If your Aunt Sally landed on the moon, if you remember the Cattlemen's Association, depending on what side of the street you live on or county, God forbid you move during the transaction, your rebate changes, get rid of this crazy crap. We're going to basic. Remember Vince Lombardi? This is a football. Get down to basic blocking and tackling. Here's the deal. Here's how we're going to do it. It costs the corporation, General Motors, zero. Nothing to do this. But every licensed driver in the United States gets $500 free service. Here's what you got to do. You get $50 every 6 months. Use it or lose it. It doesn't stack up, but you get $50 every 6 months. Okay?
So you're not saying all at once?
No. You get $50 every 6 months.
Okay.
Now, you can't use any other coupon or rebate with it. The dealer has a $9.95 oil change or, you know, $3 off wiper blades. None of that. Regular price. But you get $50 free. You can get a lube oil and filter, tire rotation, for sure.
Yeah.
Right? Now, to qualify, you got to test drive a new car while they're fixing yours.
Oh, now you're talking, Jim.
You got to test drive a car while your car is up on the hoist. Wow. You get your free $50. You got to test drive a new GM car, whatever you want to drive.
That's a Malibu, car, right?
Take a Suburban, take a Cadillac, whatever the dealer is you go to. To get your free $50, you got to drive a car. Just take it around a block, put a deal plate on it. You got to have a license, okay? You get $50 free service.
And now, what's a dealer? Just to get a dealer, I mean, dealers now pay quite a bit of money.
$50 a lead.
Just to get a lead to get somebody in the dealer.
Exactly. You're a step ahead of me.
Okay.
You're a step ahead of me. Now, think about this. The $50 really only costs a dealer $25.
Okay.
Okay? $25.
How do you figure?
It's your cost. Lube oil and filter, your tires, $45, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Only costs them half time they pay the guy and pay for the filter. Their cost is $25, say. So tell me any dealer in the United States that wouldn't pay $25 to have the customer's car up on a hoist in their service department and their ass in the seat going around the block. Good morning. You don't need the internet. The hell with TrueCar. True this. They're buying a car. Now, this is extra mile.
Traffic's in trouble now.
It costs nothing. This is worth billions. I'm very serious. I'm pulling my pants down. I'm telling you. I'm giving this away. This is free stuff. I've taken dealers making $20,000 a month and turned it into $200,000 a month. I test marketed it. They went from two for service writers to four, hired a shop foreman and a porter, and had open late on Monday and open on Saturday, making so much money. This is very serious. This is how you make profit. It's not a dirty word. Car up in the air, they're test driving a car. About the extra mile comes into the fact that if you're in a current lease, you can win up to 10,000 miles if you just come by your local GM dealership.
Wait, run through that again.
Guarantee you're going to win $100, 100 miles, just for stopping by. We do a spin. It's called extra mile. America went the extra mile.
Like a big
GM's going the extra mile. You come in and you get a spin. Guarantee you get 100 miles. You're leasing a Lincoln. You're leasing a BMW. You got a Jaguar. You're on a lease. You stop by your local store.
He thinks we roll large. You notice?
Yeah. You get. No, you can win up to 10,000 more miles on your lease. Extra mile. Now, when you come in, I know what you're driving. I've shook your hand. I've seen my car. And you got to test drive mine, but you get a spin for the extra mile. Now, if you win 1,000 miles, the GM can pay for that. That's all right. We got all their stuff. We got their information. We know when their lease expires. We've started the relationship. They've been in our dealership. They've test drove our product. Come on. This is marketing. This works. This is basic blocking and tackling. This isn't a red toe tag sale or President's Day or March Madness or some clown in a suit. This is what works. This is how you sell cars. Take it from a guy that knows. This is a problem with General Motors. We got great products, wonderful people. They don't know how to sell a car. They have no clue. Most of what they do is wrong. They should just fire everybody and close the sales and marketing department. They'd sell twice as many cars because they get in their way. I'm serious. They got to know how to do it. If you know how to do it, I'm telling you, I know how to do it. I mean, I've been in it for 40 years. You know, not that I'm smart. I'm old. I've been around. Listen.
Yeah.
You go to Ohio and you hang out at a Buick store, the guy will tell you. I went on vacation to Florida or take a trip to California. I go to a local dealership and I listen to the sales manager or the guys and let them tell me what works. I'm not that smart. I'm just a good listener.
Yeah.
Bring them in the dealership. Get them behind the wheel. Get their car up in the hoist. That's how you sell cars. And you only pay the $25 a dealer if they actually come in. Otherwise, you don't pay.
So let's assume that 10 dealers are watching this show right now.
At least.
And they do this.
I guarantee you their profitability will more than double without expense.
Really?
What Jim is saying rings so true to me. Everyone has, on the sales side of the business, has always told me the most surefire way to get somebody to buy a car is get them to test. Well, number one, you got to get them in the dealership.
Right.
And the rule of thumb in this business has always been, for every four people who walk into a dealership, one will buy. So you just got to get more people to walk in. So that's why I love your plan. And secondly, if you can get them to test drive the car, that is like the next best thing you can do to get them to buy.
Doubles the chances they'll buy it if they drive it.
Well, and I've got to think that, I've always thought there are some people in America now that they will never buy a General Motors product. They're just politically or they had a bad experience in 1980, so now they're never going to own another General Motors product. But I think that what they have now is so good.
Will they come in for their
free
$50?
I think that's
how you bring them back.
Yeah, that's what
will
I
they
mean.
Come back for $50? $50 free service?
I'm sure.
That's the only shot you got.
Yeah.
You're never going to sell you. They're going to hate you and trash you forever. Yeah. But if they come in for the free 50, you might turn them around.
Right.
And it costs you nothing. What do you got to lose? See, somebody can come to you with a good idea, cost you $200,000. I got a great idea. Write the check. If it doesn't work, you're out to $200,000. If my idea doesn't work, it costs you nothing. See, if you do something more effective and it works and it doesn't cost anything, mathematically you have to be more profitable. It's simple math.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, you're not out anything. So what's the downside? See, you're right. The people, minds and perception, like Paul was saying before, you got to win over their hearts and their minds. People tell me, I don't want a General Motors car. They don't even know what the brands are. They got this negative. Yeah. So how do you get past that? That's what we got to conquer and take back. How do we change their minds and their hearts? Give them free $50. Watch them turn.
Well, and I think GM does have some absolutely terrific product.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
Up and down the line. It's hard to find.
Great new engines coming. These new Ecotec engines, the 2 4-cylinders and the 3-cylinders that we've read about, we know about, these are great power plants. Yeah. We got great product. We really do.
You got another suggestion?
I got a ton of them.
I know you do. So give us one.
Well, I thought they should take the top people at General Motors for each brand and have them go in the dealership service departments for a month and just say hello. In fact, every salary salesperson should spend at least one day a month in the dealership service department. Not in a golf course, not having lunch with a dealer, but shake hands and talk to the customers in the lounge, hear what their problems are, say hello, build goodwill, it costs us nothing. See, communication. Jerry York tried to tell us that. Communication, communication, communication. This is very effective, very key. General Motors is a concept or an idea to many of our customers. Well, let's make it a little more personal. That's how we win them back. That's how you build goodwill. I'm not in the car business. I'm in the people business. People buy cars from me because they like me. I think. I don't know why.
But I think what a lot of people don't understand is that there is an adversarial relationship between dealers and the automakers.
And rightly so. And it's our fault.
So, I mean, how do you... So again, you're one of the ways you break down that adversarial relationship, as you're saying, is you get the executives to come in and
that would help. Puts a face on General Motors.
Yeah.
You know, hi, I'm the manager of the auto show, and, you know, I put on the shows, and, you know, how do you like our cars? And just say hello. Just meet the people. Have a cup of coffee.
But this is meeting the customers versus meeting the...
Not going to... most of the reps that I know of, and maybe this is a little old school because I haven't worked in a dealership in a few years, but the rep from General Motors comes by, you know, and he meets with the dealer because they have important business to talk about. And they go to lunch, or they go to the golf course, you know, and that's all well, fine, and good. It's good communication. But my point is, take a day and just go in the service department. And our customers that are coming in, because they got a squeak or a rattle or a problem, or whatever, get them a cup of coffee. Say hello. Hey, I'm with General Motors. Give them your card. We want to be more active in the social media. Well, how about the real world?
Mm-hmm.
Press the flesh and say hello. Can I get you a cup of coffee?
Do you think that this plan of yours would sell Cadillacs and Buicks, or would it sell more Chevys? I mean, it seems to me that if I'm a kind of guy who buys Cadillacs all the time or buys luxury cars all the time, and you tell me you got $50 coming, I might not care.
That's a good question. And Lexus picked up on that with the quality of their service and the stuff that they did. And they forced us to become more competitive, and now Buick's got the crown. Right. Buick is the highest quality dealer service per J.D. Powers. They just announced it. So it's competitive, and competition is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether it's a Cadillac or Chevrolet, you know, you appeal to people. Like I said, I'm in the people business.
Right.
It's about people. Whether you're a brand-new driver or you're a 85-year-old, you know, person getting your last car. I try to treat people
right.
The same and listen to what they want. But it's about how you treat people. And we can't be pressuring them in the adversarial thing you mentioned because mm-hmm. you come in and, you know, they want to sell you the wheel and tire and the etch and the extended warranty and the credit life, which is good if you qualify and you're elderly. It's a good value. But it's an adversarial relationship. That's what we need to change.
Well, I think people think that they're going to be taken when they go
to
dealers.
They are. They have been.
And
yes.
And General Motors, I mean, when Saturn was created, now I don't know what you thought about that whole
experience. It was different, you know, change,
I mean,
they got starved of product, but yeah.
Right, but I mean, I remember going into a Saturn dealer and I bought a Saturn.
They clapped and said hooray.
Well, but it wasn't that. The thing that was so amazing was that they actually, the woman, this was back in the days of adding machines, and she said, you know, I said, I want this option, and this option. She put the numbers in, and then when I was done,
you got it.
She pushed the button, tabulated it up, ripped the thing off, and said, here, this is what it's going to cost you. It's like, wow.
It was a good experience for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell you're smiling.
No, so it's like, you know, when I go to the grocery store and I'm buying groceries, I mean, there's no surprise when I go to the checkout. I mean, the woman doesn't try to, you know, haggle with me and say, well, you know
right.
what? Like, you know, I actually want to sell you those beans for 10 more cents.
But I got to go talk to my manager first.
Yeah, I'll be right back. Yeah.
But, you know, what you're saying about getting top-level executives into the dealer level is...
They're so busy, well, you know, but still.
Remember early on when Alan Mulally came to Ford, he did just that.
I
don't know what the dealership is, the Ford dealership in Dearborn, but Alan went in there and he hung out with the other salespeople. He actually sold at least one car that I'm aware of. And the woman who bought it didn't believe that this was the CEO of Ford Motor Company selling her a car. That incident of him going to the dealership went through the company like a lightning bolt, and through all the Ford dealership network.
Yes.
It was like, wow, the CEO is in a showroom. So I think what you're saying just rings true to me that it would work.
Ross Perot did it. He used, and Ed Whitaker, I guess, even in the Renaissance, would go down amongst the employees and just... chit-chat. I read his book, and he took some guy that was saying something, came and put him in charge of OnStar for a minute.
For a minute, right.
For a minute.
Somebody who was mouthing off.
But right. Yeah, that's what the book said. But right. I never met old Ed, but I kind of liked him. I liked his style. That's leadership. You know, don't get stuck in the rut of the same old stuff. We got these rebates in every month. Like today, I had a buddy who wanted to buy a Cadillac today. And I told him, only an idiot would buy a car on May 1st. If I die and I'm no longer around, always remember to wait to the end of the month. Don't ever buy the first week of the month, because they always pour it on, and particularly a sale. So you know what I'm here to tell you? The General Motors Assurance Program. Remember Ebonics? That guy was moving on up to General Motors. What was his name? Joel.
Joel Awonik.
Joel Awonik.
Ebonics, yeah. No, never mind. But let me tell you this. The assurance program, remember Hyundai had thing?
Right. Yeah.
Didn't he do that?
Yes.
Okay, here's my General Motors assurance program. Buy a car today. The rebate changes in the next 30 days. You get the money. Don't be afraid to buy the car today.
Whoa.
You know, people are afraid to buy a car today because they're afraid that tomorrow it's going to be more money.
Yeah.
Yeah, you buy a car today from me. If it goes up, there's more incentive in the next 30 days. You get the money. Can we do it right now? See, overcome objections. Don't make people afraid to buy a car. I'm in the people business.
Isn't that the key to sales? Take
Absolutely.
Away objections.
Closing deals. Turn new cars into used cars. If we sold 20 million cars, we wouldn't have too many problems.
Yeah, if this country
said that,
well,
sell another million cars, these problems will go away. What if General Motors went back to, I got my, you know what this is right here? This is my Bill Lovejoy 29 pin. Remember those?
Yeah.
Yes.
I met with Bill. He's a very nice man. I told him, if you don't listen, you're going to lose five. I was wrong. They lost 15.
Yeah.
But I think
whatever. You know what I mean? You got to change the way you treat people.
Well, I was looking at your website, and back in the 90s, you were...
Wagner pissed me off.
And you were really on the
He wouldn't let me pass my ideas out. He had security escort me out of the building. I pointed at him and said he's going to bankrupt the company. I was going to cover the Wall Street Journal. Now all my salary GM customers were afraid to buy a car from me. You called for my boss's resignation. I said, so? He's an asshole. edit that.
So how is it that you're so passionate about General Motors? A company
I love
that,
General Motors.
I mean, but...
I am General Motors.
So you pointed out chapter and verse of issues that the company had, you know, then.
Yeah, and constructive criticism.
Right.
You can't just throw stones unless you can tell them what they should do instead. Mm-hmm. Anybody can say Cabrera should be on third base. Well, if you want to say he should be on first base, tell me why.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me what I'm doing wrong. Tell me what I should be doing instead. See, that's the difference. See, I got the ideas, and this son of a bitch wouldn't let me tell anybody.
So do you think there's greater receptivity now at General Motors for your ideas?
There is with John and the intelligentsia,
but
in-house
General Motors.
People, I don't know. Well, we'll see if they call me.
What do you think?
We'll find out if they call me. You know, I've been blacklisted. I've been followed around like Ralph Nader. Do you think I'm kidding you? I'm telling you very seriously.
Well, let me ask you, you know, Lincoln is starting, they just announced that they're going to start selling vehicles in China. And they have a really interesting idea. They have very lavish dealerships planned as a way, it's part of their way of luring
Lincoln.
Customers. Lincoln.
That's good.
And, I mean, they have, you're going to be able to... look at a life-size flat-screen display of your car, and then you can pick the colors. You know, it's going to be like picking a car on your computer or whatever. You can configure it and everything, but in life-size. And another thing that they are going to have is live video feeds from the repair shop, because apparently Chinese customers are even more distrustful of the repair shop than American customers. And one of the ways they're trying to build trust in the dealership is having an open dealership with cameras all about, so that you can actually watch the mechanics working on your car or doing
a repair.
That's
a good idea.
That's why I was
curious.
You
ever pick up your car and something else is wrong with it?
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. That's scary, isn't it? It makes you wonder.
And
good point.
And I think they're even offering to send you a videotape. You know, if you don't want to sit there and actually watch it live, they'll actually send you a videotape.
I'd rather have somebody I trust and give them the keys.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be interested in watching my car get built on the assembly line. So if you're going to go to limited inventory and look at the internet, but don't have one of these detention centers that people go in and you think these millennials are going to come to your office, they got the smartphone. They don't need you. But if you can order a car and direct, like Tesla wants you to do, without the dealer, that we'll see. I think there's a blend in the middle that'll work. But I think it'd be really cool to say you want a red Corvette with a black top and a black interior, and you want this suspension, and you want these wheels just the way you want. You spend a lot of money. Have it built just for you the way you want. And then when it's coming down the line, they had the camera, you could see your car getting built. I think that'd be really cool. And then instead of wondering or waiting for the dealer to call you and tell you when the order's coming in, they sent you automatic emails, you know, like your car is scheduled to be built on this mm-hmm. day, the car has arrived at the dealership this day. If we could increase the communication.
Sure. Or that would not be only that, it creates a sense of drama about
it. But how many people, I mean, you've been selling cars for a long time. How many people want to wait for their car versus how many people want a car
depends
right
if you
now?
Just wrecked one or, well, you know, I mean, it's or a just, I mean, fun thing.
I mean, isn't
it's
it
all over the board. It's both. You know, people will wait, but sometimes they don't. You plan ahead. Obviously, I have a daughter that's going to get her license in a few months. So I'm going to buy her a car tomorrow mm-hmm. just because I got a good deal of a trade-in, and it's rad.
So she wouldn't want to necessarily watch that car being built.
Not necessarily.
She wants the car.
It's only $4,000. Yeah, I don't think she's going to wait for that to get built. That happened 10 years
ago. I actually bought my Mini Cooper that way 10 years ago. And back then, they were just opening up in the U.S., and they didn't have any inventory, so you had to order it.
Right.
And it was the craziest. At that time, it was the craziest thing. I just gave them a $2,500 deposit or something on my credit card, and then they said okay, and then suddenly I started getting these emails, okay, we've got your email, and then, you know, a few weeks later they'd say, okay, it's on the line, you know, and
oh,
then
they
tell you, yeah. Then
that's
I get an email, oh,
yeah,
it's
that's
on
what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's on the boat.
That's kind of cool.
Know?
Oh, they really?
And then they told me, okay, it's at the port of entry, and then it and then finally they let me know it was at the dealership. And then I went to the dealership, and then I was thinking, my God, what have I done? You know, I'm going to get there, and the dealer's going to say, well, you know, there's some other charges before we can give you the car or whatever.
They didn't do that, though, did they?
No.
Now, that's Mini Cooper.
Yeah.
Is that BMW?
Yeah, BMW.
Yeah.
And it was actually terrific. I mean.
So you bought the car?
Yeah.
You still got it?
Yeah.
How many miles on it?
I got 65,000.
Wouldn't you rather have a Buick? I got a new Encore you might really like. Is it outside?
Yeah.
We'll look on the way out.
Yeah.
We might make a deal.
But I tell you, I drive a lot
They're
of
a nice
cars.
Car. Well, good gas mileage?
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah?
You know, but.
He's going to wait for that $500
free service?
Free service
yeah.
thing.
Let me tell you what, guys, seriously. We talk about selling another, General Motors sells another million cars. What does that do? What does that do for the VEBA? What does that do for investment in new facilities? What does that do for employee benefit? What does it do for jobs? I mean,
puts money in the economy.
It all starts when we sell something. Yeah. So this is what I was here to talk to you about. So we got Extra Mile, okay? You can spin to win extra miles on your lease. Now I know when your lease ends. I know when your lease ends. You've been in my dealership. You got my brochure. And I'm giving you extra miles. We started the relationship. We've got the $500 free service every 6 months. You get $50 free. You keep coming back. Say you keep your current car another couple of years, but every 6 months you're coming to me and I'm giving you a free oil change. You're taking a test drive. What's the odds I'm going to sell you a car next time? The odds pretty good I'm going to sell you one tonight, but we'll see about that later. But see, it's that relationship. It's that relationship, see? And we do that. This is how we sell cars.
Yeah.
If we don't do this, we'll continue to lose market share. I said we go down to 15%. We were at 16.7 in March. I don't know about April. Rising 18.5. Tide, huh?
18.5.
For GM?
For GM, for
okay.
8.
You're always up on that stuff. I'm glad to hear it. I hope it goes back to 30. In fact, I want to do my part to help it happen. But we got to look at how we treat people, how we get over the government motors, okay? We're going to give back every licensed driver. Doesn't matter. You got a Honda, Toyota, Volkswagen, doesn't matter. You had a problem before? Well, we're sorry. $50 free, come to your local dealer. Cost General Motors nothing. The dealers will eat the $25 a shot. They're driving, boom, bada boom, bada bing. Make the door swing, phone ring. Let's sell cars. Let's make money. Life is good. That's the bottom line. I can't make it any simpler.
Look, yeah. See, what I love about what you're telling is you're a true sales guy. I've always said that the automakers are brilliant when it comes to designing, engineering, manufacturing, and marketing cars, but not selling
them. No, they're
not
good at marketing.
Well, okay. But what I'm getting at is I don't know, with the exception of Lee Iacocca, one top executive in this business who came up on the sales side of
never
the organization.
Never sold a car in their life.
Never
exactly.
sold a car in their lives. Right.
Exactly.
But think they know how to do it.
Tell us how to build dealerships. Now they want to do away with sales desks and pictures of salesmen. Try to make it interpersonal where you walk around with a cell phone and wait on somebody. No, I built a career out of people looking at my kid's picture. And talking to them and dealing with them. This is how
you
build a business.
Like you said, you're selling yourself.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's the people business. See, and we close all these dealers, okay, and we try to do everything impersonal on the internet. There's a niche for that and maybe a very growing niche. But let's not just change everything. Remember Bill Knapp's restaurants? Did you ever go there?
Mm-hmm.
They had the chicken noodle soup. You got the cake on your birthday. They hired some MBA come in. He changed the decor, changed the menu. Shortly after, they went out of business. See, if we're going to evolve, that's good, but let's not lose what we got.
So what do you think about this whole idea of what Tesla's pushing of owning its dealerships? I mean, we saw the thing I try to tell people is that, you know, lots of automakers have actually tried this before, and it was a miserable failure. Ford yes. tried it.
New York, where I'm from.
Yeah. And I think a couple other places. But, I mean, it's been tried before, and it's been a horrible failure. What do you think about, you know, is Tesla just kind of swimming upstream, or they're just kind of ignoring it because they're small, or is this idea going to catch on?
Well, you know, what
and is
I...
Is it a good thing?
What I get from it is mostly what I read. I try to read and keep up on things. So my thoughts aren't really so much my own, but I try to blend it in there. I think the guy has a right to do as he wants to do. But you said he wants to own the dealerships, but I don't see him opening any. Some show places, but how are you going to service the customer? This is the key issue. And I think that'll be the determining factor in his success or failure. And the guy's been very successful, so who am I to, you know, criticize his success? But you got to take care of the customer. And if you're going to just send a truck around or look for a place to plug your car in, it might be an issue if you try to do any volume. And you got, I think I heard you guys discussing earlier, once you satisfy a demand, you know, how many more incremental sales are there? So we'll find out. You got to have the infrastructure, but you got to take care of the customer. Buying a car is a one-day thing. Owning a car is a 5 or 8 year thing. So you got to be able to take care of the customer. This is a real question. Whether he owns a dealership or there's a franchise, I think you got to have bricks and mortar out there to take, you know, take care of the people. It's not, everything's not Amazon.com.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know, with Tesla, he's trying to open dealerships, and in some states are actually, you know, the dealers are getting together and
well,
trying to block
them. I think
he
just wants to sell direct. I don't think that it's a dealership.
It's not a service facility so much as
it's just
place in a mall where you can look at a car and pick a car.
Oh, what it really is about, he does not want to go through the dealer franchise system.
Right. Right.
They've seen what Apple has done with Apple stores, and they went, that's for us. Why should we give dealers an 18% markup? We're going to take that money ourselves. But to your point, and this hasn't hit him yet, who's going to service the cars? Okay. And who's going to handle these used car sales? You know, this has
Trade
yet
ins.
To be answered.
I'll handle them.
I'm
available.
I don't think there's any problem in entrepreneurial people
we'll
do
find
things like that. That is not going to be an issue.
CarMax is open in more stores, so there's always a place to handle those babies.
You know, and in terms of service centers, I mean, so what if they just have, Tesla qualified training to learn how to fix one of these things? I mean, why do you need a...
I'm wondering who shows the features of the car. I mean, if you go pick it up, I haven't bought one. I don't really have faith.
Well, I can tell you, everyone who's bought one has spent countless hours online reading everything about
it. And all that computer, everything's on that one screen.
Yeah.
That's a distraction. I mean, you're texting, you're in the ditch.
Yeah.
To me, I'd rather have a knob. I don't want to look at a...
Right.
I don't even like the backup cameras that they're talking about making required now.
It is required.
Because you're looking at the camera, that's fine, but I'd rather turn my head and look this way and look this way than rely on that camera just here because, I don't know. Technology's good, but you can have overkill. Ford got into that with their customer satisfaction things because it was too much, you know? I can find the Tigers just by twisting the knob.
Detroit Tigers, that's right.
Exactly.
Hey, look, we got a number of questions coming in from the audience, too, so why don't we get to some of those so we don't leave those people dangling. Ben, let's get to rapid fire and let it rip.
Maybe you went a bender.
Yeah.
First question is Dr. Botox wants to know, will Cadillac ever sell 100 ELRs in a month? They have not in the first 5 months of sales, despite a huge campaign during the Olympics. Any thoughts? Anyone?
Yes. Abu Dhabi or Dubai or whatever you call it. They'll buy 100 of them. They got the money.
Here you go.
But then again, they don't like electrics. They got oil. Well, forget that.
Forget that idea. That is the biggest market for the Tahoes and Suburbans.
The hybrids? The gas ones?
No,
burn that oil.
Yeah.
Okay. They missed,
well,
George.
They sold 61 last month, and so they're selling about 60 a month, so they're on their way.
How do you like that ad they did, though, with the guy walking by so successful?
Yeah.
There was some controversy on that, whether it was... you know, too confident or actually
too
aspirational.
Right.
Yeah.
It didn't hit me
one way or the other.
I don't know. I thought it was good because I saw it as an electric car commercial for Republicans, essentially.
You know? That is a great point, Drew. I never thought of it that way.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I thought immediately. I mean, Tesla already's got, you know, the eco folks. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, I just thought it was, hey, I'm telling you, it's okay to buy an electric car, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought they got everybody talking about it.
They did.
I thought it was a success. I mean, whether they lampooned it or people were angry, all the people that were upset were never going to buy one anyway, you know? So I thought it was
fun. How
many,
Gary?
61.
Last month?
Last month,
April.
Right.
But they get a lot of credits, a lot of mileage credits through CAFE.
They get a lot of money for the car, too.
Yeah.
Do they? I thought you had to have a pure EV. To get that.
Oh, man.
So I don't know.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know. But I
anyway. Yeah. Hey, we've got a number of phone calls. Ben, let's bring one in.
Nick Kalugi on the phone. I heard you had the Buick man on this evening. I wanted to chime in. So I took a peek at Mr. Dallinger's site. I saw he has the Dallinger difference. How does that work exactly? And can you go too far on personal service? Like picking up the kids from soccer practice. Speaking of which, when are we going to get an auto line with all the McElroy boys on the show? That would be great. Thank you, John. This was from Columbia in South Carolina. Have a good night.
Thank you, Columbia. So he's talking about another sales aspect?
Well, he was talking about picking up the kids from practice, and I'm doing it already. It's my kids, but as far as your kids, unless they're on the same team, I don't know that I can help. But personal service, how can you extend it? I guess if you need bail money, you could call me. Other than that, the Dallinger difference is that we're in the people business, not in the car business. I'm a licensed real estate broker, but I'm not in the real estate business. I'm in the people business. So if I can help you, let me know.
Lexus started out with that. They were the ones that really led with okay, we're going to give you a loaner car, or we'll come to your house and pick up your car up at your house for the oil change and all this lavish customer service. They built a great reputation. A lot of people imitated. But then you saw everybody started backing away from that because it was expensive.
Exactly.
And what's the right medium for that?
Well, you bring up a very good point, and this is where I say the people business. Lexus, owned by Toyota, but Lexus's thing was the passionate pursuit of perfection, if you remember their lingo, when they had all those J.D. Powers awards at the auto show that lined the whole cabinet. They were passionate pursuit of perfection. Well, what I do is I have a full-time employee that all she does is call my customers every 6 months, and she asks you if anything needs attention on your car. Do you have a moment? One lady called me, or we called her, and her power seat quit working on her 17-year-old Buick, far out of warranty. And she said she didn't think she could afford to fix it, but it wasn't set in a position she liked it because her husband had driven it before he died. So she asked me what to do. So we went over there. I picked up the lady's car, took it to the trim shop. It was just a fuse. We fixed it, took it back. Cost her nothing. She called me crying. Mr. Dallinger, you called me to see if I need anything. You came and got my car. You fixed it, and you didn't charge me. You are a wonderful man. I will never buy a car again, probably, but I'm going to tell everybody in my family and at the church what you did for me. And there's passionate and there's ridiculous. See, I'm ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay, so I was just going to ask you if you sold her a car.
You know what it cost me? Nothing.
Nothing, okay.
No, she's dead now.
But, all right, but you got...
I sold her son a car.
Okay.
But it's the people, see? That's the difference. You do the right thing, and things work out. You don't worry about them.
I like that philosophy. Hey, we got another call here. Ben, let's bring one in.
Hi, this is Ryan from Overland Park, Kansas. I love the show. I just wanted to ask a question regarding the recent sales figures. I'm looking at the sales figures for the industry and for GM and Ford particularly, and seeing their inventory levels. Do you think there's an issue with channel stuffing right now? Thanks. Love the show. Bye.
Yeah, what he's wondering is, are they just blowing production out to dealers and letting their inventory rise so that they can claim sales have gone up?
They claim them when they, the factory, when they ship them to the dealer.
Deliveries.
Well, they book the sale. They book the sale financially when it drives off.
Versus the retail numbers.
Right, 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 right.
You know, when you go by Flint and you see the truck plant and they're jammed with product across the street, I mean, in parking lots everywhere at the truck plant. So you get to wonder, are they building, supposed to only build when they're sold? You know, Sloan started that. You don't build a truck unless you got a dealer order. You don't build and warehouse them. We got into that problem a few years ago. It gets very expensive. So I got wondering, and I talked to a friend of mine, and he's a manufacturer, and he said the rail system is all backed up. He's got stuff and product and warehouses going all over the country, and he can't get it out. So this isn't General Motors' fault. They actually have truck product that's not even at the dealer. It's at the factory sitting around. I went through Canada. You drive by the plant there, you know, on the...
Oshawa?
No, I think it was Kami. But
oh, yeah.
A lot of product, but see, you got to get the rail to ship
okay.
it. And it's very frustrating for a customer that could have ordered their car. It's built and sitting there, but they ain't got a way to get it to you. But that's different than channel stuffing in terms of the dealers' lots. And I drive around dealers, and they're full. They're full. But we're supposed to be full.
Right
spring
now?
Market.
This is spring selling season.
Yes, so we're supposed to be full. So I don't sense the stuffing so much right now. I've seen it before. Mm-hmm. I don't see it right now.
Yeah, you know, another, it's interesting that you bring up the point about the rails, because I've heard with all this oil being moved by rail right now, it's not that there's a shortage of rail cars. There's a shortage of space on the rails themselves. They're so loaded up with these oil tankers.
We got oil.
Yeah.
Is it your sense from being in car sales that the amount of sales that are happening now, you said this is spring selling season, do you think it's as robust as you would imagine it to be after the hard winter? Are we selling as many cars right now?
December was horrible. I had no power for a week. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was chopping wood at 4 in the morning, dude. I'm not that kind of fella.
So you heard us talking
but
earlier
now
to Gary's point. The numbers seem, I mean, they're good numbers, but they seem a little softer than what everybody was thinking.
Well, they're not robust, but they're steady. I just had the best month I've had in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm sensing is there's young people coming into the market. And I've done them from Virginia to Iowa, nationwide deliveries right to your driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And I saved a lady $1,000 over what she could have bought it in Virginia, trapped it in the driveway. But it's the young people, her daughter, the kids. There's new drivers coming up. That's mm-hmm. driving the market. Then you got the older, you know, the life cycle, how old the product is. There's a replacement market that people just, you know, washing machine. You got to replace it after so long.
Right.
And it might not be in love with it. Then you got the new product that brings the attraction. So there's a combination of factors that are getting us to the level. I don't know that overall economic and employment numbers and the state of the overall economy is all that great, but for a combination of factors, I'm feeling, and I feel it directly, sales lifting because of a combination of factors. Low interest rates are also good for real estate. If rates go up a couple points, it's going to hurt the real estate market, and that drives jobs. People are buying trucks with construction. We're seeing new builds coming back again, finally.
Mm-hmm.
So things are moving in the right direction. And, you know, we could talk about the Federal Reserve or the rate of interest or tax policies or macroeconomics. And, you know, that's well, fine, and good. I came down here to talk to you about microeconomics, or specifically what our industry and our company can do to lift our sales, to increase our market share, to increase our profitability, to raise the price of our stock, to make life good for everybody. We got to do things the right way, and it's time for change. And I hope the current leaders at General Motors are willing to do it. Talk about old GM, new GM. I've seen old GM. I loved old GM, but didn't like what happened, but I could see it coming. I was ahead of my time.
Okay, I got a question.
Now we got to do is turn things around and sell some cars.
How do you sell a Buick to a young person, my first-time
Great
rider?
Great question. God, are you...
I had a guy call you one later, by the way.
I had a guy call me from Florida.
Drew. Just that mini goodbye, Drew.
Yeah. Multi-millionaire calls me from Florida. Got me off the internet. His daughter's graduating from Pennsylvania College. Wants to buy her a new car. She said, what should I get her? And I want to make it simple and very busy. I said, okay, how about you lease her a new Buick Regal because her life could change in a couple of years.
Yeah.
She might be married or have a different job. You don't know. So just do a 2-year lease on the Buick Experience, and you get the new upgraded technology. It's got Pandora and Stitcher mm-hmm. and Bluetooth. She'll love it in the screen and the OnStar. He says, she doesn't want an old person's car. he's driving a Mercedes and his son's got a BMW. Yeah. I said, she'll love it. Let me get your price. So I do, and I sent him a brochure. She's driving it. Loved it. 2 weeks later, the UPS truck comes in front of my house. I got two big crates like this of Omaha steaks. Got the chicken, the desserts, the whole thing. I call him on the phone. I said, George, what is this? Because I seen his name on it. He said it's the best experience I ever had. He said, I was in and out of that deal in 30 minutes. I sent him the local deal. I just called and set it up. Yeah. I called the guy. I said, you pay me a commission if I sell a Buick for you? He says, yeah, I guess. I give him my name. He says, dude, you're a legend. I said, will you pay me more? He said, no, but you're a legend. I said, I don't really care. Get the car ready for George. You come pick it up. He walked into the dealer down in Florida, wrote the check. They're out of there. Loves me. Great relationship.
So what do you say? I mean,
she's a young girl.
Yeah.
She just graduated college. She's driving a new Buick Regal.
So it's because people don't know that car is a car.
She had no
that
clue.
Is not an
she
old
didn't.
Person's
oh, Dad's
car.
Paying for it anyway.
Right.
But she's in it. Now she's a Buick customer.
Right.
Now we got to follow up on her. You know, the LeSabre buyers, we quit making them and they're dying. So we have to look at who we're getting next. And I don't like these little Buicks. I like big cars, but I'm a bit of a dinosaur. But it's all about the people. We got to bring these people into the Buick fold with the great service that we have. Number one, service. And take care of them. And then it becomes more than just the car. Although the car what brings them in, it's really about the product. It's a critical issue. It's also how you treat the people and take care. Like your dentist. Probably when you leave your dentist, you already got your next appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Car dealers don't do that. If I'm in a dealership, when you get done with your oil change, I'm getting your appointment for your next oil change. And I don't call you when it's ready. I text you. That's quicker, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, do you think Buick's obsessing a little bit on this image of... I'm starting to get the impression that the idea of Buick as an old person's car, that's kind of like a baby boomer idea, where like, you know, the Generation Xers or the Gen... They don't think much one way or the other about a Buick. I mean, I know a few, like, I guess they're people in there say they're early, mid-30s that have bought Buicks. Mm-hmm. And they were... I didn't get the impression that they, you know, really had this idea that was an old person's car or whatever. They saw it.
Yeah, because
you know,
it's been so under the radar for so long that we have a new generation now that doesn't know what the old Buick ever was.
Yeah.
Back.
To them, it's almost a brand new brand.
Yeah.
Don't you like that new ad they got out? General Motors did a great job on that ad. With
Where nobody
I didn't
knows
know
what
it was
it
a
is.
Buick.
Yeah.
What's my Buick?
Right.
Well, I know what a Buick is.
Yeah.
For Christ's
yeah.
sake.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're classic styling. It's understated. It's not too flashy. They ride good. They're smooth. They're quiet. They're a good value. Who wouldn't want a Buick?
I think the line is you really rather have a Buick, right?
We're evolving.
Okay, one last question, and then we'll wrap this up. But Rum and Coke wants to know, what is your all-time favorite Buick?
That would have to be my 95 Riviera. I got the first one, even before the dealer. I was very upset, though, when a dealer, I saw it come in, the first rendezvous, and I didn't get the first one to give it to Tiger Woods. I was upset. But I kept that car 10 years, drove it 185,000 miles. The only thing that went wrong, I spent $40 fixing a rear seatbelt, and later on they had a campaign on it, and they reimbursed me. I gave it to my daughter. She drove it to 235,000. And then she sold it for $1,500. Last I knew, it was still driving, still riding. I love that car. In fact, I come out. We'll let this go, but I come out of my driveway. I come out of my house one day. I had a Riata convertible. I had a black Denali XL. I had a yellow Corvette convertible, and I had my '95 Riviera. And I was walking out with my shorts on, thinking, which car am I going to hop in? I grabbed the keys to the Riv. I was gone. A Buick. Yeah.
That's great.
Hey, look, we could easily go on another hour here.
We've got one more phone call.
Oh, one more phone call. I'm sorry about that.
One more.
Ben, let's bring that in.
Hi, John. Calling in from Los Angeles. Wanted to ask your guest the most effective way to teach the salespeople on the floor about new products. What does he think? Thanks.
Ooh, good question. How many times have I gone into a dealership and knew more than the sales guy did? So how do you teach that? Yeah, and there's so much new product coming out far faster than it ever did in the past. How do you do that? How do you
teach
the salespeople?
It's a very good question. You know, I'm really a salesman, but I've run a couple dealerships. I've been a sales manager, a general sales manager, and a general manager. And training is a very, very big part. And the people that you work in, you know, turnover will kill you, because after you train them and they leave, God forbid, that's a whole other thing, is retention once you train them, because you got all this expense. But to train them properly, I tell a story of a Kirby vacuum salesperson. You've ever had a Kirby guy come to your house, or
yep.
woman, knock on your door, and they want to show you how your vacuum and what it does and what this can do, and then your couch and your mattress, and boy, do they know their product, don't they? So the three keys to being a successful salesperson: know your product, you got to believe in your product. I read a book about Billy Durant and Flint and Buick. That's when I moved here 30 years ago, because I love the Buick. If I thought Oldsmobile was better, I'd have gone to Lansing. So believe in what yourself. If you think Chrysler's the best car, go down to Auburn Hills. You're a Ford guy, go to Dearborn, whatever. Where, you know. But believe in what you sell and know what you're selling, and then you got to be professional. You're supposed to be somewhere, be somewhere. It goes back to when I was in college. I had a professor. He wasn't a professor, actually. One of the guys that wasn't a professor, a Dr. Miller. And I was getting out of school, and his door was ajar. I was taking a long last look. So I knocked on his door. I said, sir, do you have a moment? He says, yeah. Yeah, what do you got? I said, well, I've come to this illustrious institution, and my dad just spent about 50 grand. This was 30 years ago. And I just never had you a professor. I wonder what advice you might give a young man going out into the world. He had shoes on like me. He put his shoe up like this here. He says, you see these shoes here, young man? I said, yeah, I do. He said, what are those called? You know what they're called?
Oxfords.
No.
For wingtips.
Wingtips.
Yeah.
You see them holes?
Yeah.
I said, why are they there? Do you know why? He says, years ago, the Indians tied animal things under, and they poked holes, let the moisture out. It's evolved over years to the style today. So whatever you're going to go out and do in your business, know more about your business than anybody else. Know how they're built. Know the history. Mm-hmm. Know how they're constructed. Learn everything you can do. And then people will come to you, and they'll want to know. You're the expert. You have knowledge. Knowledge is success in selling. If you have the knowledge to know what you're talking about. It's not bullshit. It's knowledge. That's when I got the book about General Motors and how it started, and Billy Durant that founded the company and the Buick Motor Company, and I came here to look around. I said, son of a bitch, I'm going to move here. Now I know you guys.
Okay, and then you moved to Flint, which
yeah.
And that would be like the best place in the world to sell Buicks.
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chevrolet was a foreign car.
Yeah.
That's great.
But training is it's an excellent question where we are, but I'll tell you, it's very important. And then once you train them, you got to retain them. If you treat them right, there's loyalty. Loyalty with the customers, loyalty to the employees. So train them and treat them well, and they'll stay with you.
With that, we're going to have to wrap it up. Jim Dollinger, it's been awesome having you here. This is really good stuff. I like what you're talking about because it's totally actionable suggestions
and
that you're making.
And it costs nothing.
This isn't, theory and, what. No, it's like these are actionable items that you're talking about, and that's what I love why you're here.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be invited.
And, Drew, great having you here. And,
yeah, it was fun.
We promised we'd let you pitch your interiors conference.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, if you're involved in the auto industry, you're involved with interiors, you've got to come to our Ward's Auto Interiors Conference May 21st, coming up in a couple of weeks. If you go to our website, autointeriors.com, you see our whole agenda. We've got some great speakers, top designers from General Motors and Chrysler, and a whole bunch of great speakers, and a great day if you're into interiors. So go to autointeriors.com, check it out, and we'll see you there, hopefully.
And Drew will have his new car.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He'll have
see my new Buick. And Gary, great being here with you, too.
And, seeing you again. And next week, the Gutierrez brothers are going to be in here, racing brothers. And,
that's right.
It'll be interesting.
So that'll be a lot of fun. And so let's do it again then. And got to give a shout-out to everybody who's been watching and listening to this program. Great having you aboard.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.